Everyone, this is a system log analysis using Google BigQuery. I'll be telling you what BigQuery is. It's a new product. We have been using it internally for a few years, but it's a new product, so it's not that well known externally. And I'll be telling you what BigQuery is and how to use it in order to improve your system log analysis. But before I jump in and tell you all about BigQuery, what I need to tell you first is, you know, our products generate lots of logs, right? Not just mine, but yours. And if you see a few of our servers there, and we could be running virtual machines, it could be running virtual machines at the servers, so it just adds up lots of logs. And it's really boring. System log analysis is traditionally really boring. You write code, and you wait a few minutes, you wait a few hours to get a response. I have this coworker that joined Google a little over than a year ago, and he was telling me before joining Google, what I did in my previous company was basically write some code, run that code, wait overnight, show up in the morning next day, and read the results. Maybe there was a bug somewhere, change the code, rerun again, wait a few hours. Some less complex stuff takes minutes, but in larger data sets and things where we have been seeing as, you know, the scale grows, right? Virtual machines and all that, it gets more complicated. And he told me what really blew my mind when I joined was that I could do that, the same thing that I used to do, and like writing all this code and waiting overnight, I could do that in a matter of seconds. I could write a simple query and get a response in seconds. Similar data set. And I thought, well, that's really cool. So, how many of you heard about MapReduce before? That's a good amount. How many of you are Googlers? Kidding. Not a lot. So, you can be asking yourself, so why do you guys need this BigQuery thing? I heard about MapReduce, so there's a good amount of people here that heard about MapReduce before. MapReduce is really good for data analysis in general, but see, I'm not mentioning log analysis. So it's much broader. Basically, it's very flexible. It's way more flexible than just doing log analysis. Can I do log analysis using MapReduce? Yes, you definitely can. But it's not the best for the job, and I'll show you how in a few minutes. To get things a little bit more interesting, so how many of you heard about Sawzall before? Fewer people, which is understandable. So Sawzall is basically something to make it easier or speed up, in a way, MapReduce for log analysis. We have paper out about both, about MapReduce. If you've never heard about MapReduce, check out the paper about MapReduce that Google published, and the Sawzall paper as well. So Sawzall is a programming language that basically lets you replace the map phase of a MapReduce with a simple code, and that helps with log analysis because you don't need to write a map function, a very complicated map function that's going to take hours or days just to write the function, and then write reduce. You can just write Sawzall, and that substitutes the map function for you. Still great, but as you see the MapReduce architecture, which I'm going to show you later, you're going to see that it's too not that fast. I'm not solving that problem for my that coworker that want response in less than a minute, basically. And for that, we basically developed a tool called Dremel. So yeah, I'm repeating this, but sorry. How many of you heard about Dremel? Not a lot of people, which is fine because we just recently started talking about Dremel externally. Again, it's another paper that is out. So Dremel is another system. So MapReduce is a framework, Sawzall programming language. Dremel is another system. You can call it a framework as well to do data analysis. And the major difference in terms of MapReduce is the architecture. So when you compare both architectures, you're going to see how Dremel can respond to your queries much faster. Is it less flexible than MapReduce? Yes, it is. It's less. You're going to trade flexibility for raw power. That's what Dremel is. the way we externalize Dremels, we call this Google BigQuery. So we have a product, it's basically an API. So that's BigQuery is what you can use off Dremel. It's basically what you see externally. So if you search for BigQuery, you're gonna see it's a product that basically enables you through an API to do Dremel queries, and that one solves the problem from that coworker that I was talking in the beginning. I don't think I quite gave you a sense of the amount of data that we're talking about here. BigQuery will scale to petabytes of data, and it still give you a response in less than a minute. You can be surprised by that, and one of the tricks is don't scan the whole data. It seems trivial from people coming from relational databases, but when you use grep, you're basically scanning the whole data. When you're grepping your syslog, that's what you're doing. So that's the scale we're talking about here. And I can have terabytes or petabytes of data and get response very fast. We understand that system logs goes beyond syslog. So we're talking about web server logs. So can I use BigQuery to query out of my web server logs to get results out of my web server logs? Yes. And also application logs. And one of the cool things that you can do is basically have an end-to-end view of your logs, all the way from the application logs to trace a problem that you're seeing from a specific machine. So application logs, web server logs, and all the way down to the syslogs, the system logs at syslogd. So one of the tricks is if it looks familiar to you, that's a BigQuery query, and it is. It's SQL-like. So there I'm basically selecting task name and data center from a table called systemlog.today. Systemlog is what we call a data set. Systemlog.today would be a table. And I basically want to get entries where severity equals warning. So let's say you import your syslog data, and you just want to get task name and data center for entries where severity equals warning. And that will return to you basically task name crawler and data center SD. So you got one entry as a result there, and the task name crawler data center SD will definitely have one entry with where severity equals warning. So intentionally, it's to look familiar to you. So that's why we use a SQL-like language. So I think by now you have a sense of the problem that BigQuery solves. You have a sense of the amount of data we were talking about, and a vague idea why MapReduce won't help. And it can be used, but it'll be slower somehow. And so I'll be talking about if you really need BigQuery. I'll be also telling you more about the MapReduce architecture, especially for those that don't never heard about MapReduce. I think it's very useful. And I'll show you how it's flexible. It's a little bit heavy for the job of system log analysis. I'll be also showing you the BigQuery architecture. I'll be showing you a live demo of the BigQuery. I'll talk a little bit about pricing. And I'll give you a homework. And we're going to jump into Q&A. All right, so do I need BigQuery? Well, you definitely need BigQuery because using grep alone won't scale. So if you have one server and you're not generating a ton of syslog information, web server logs, application logs, and it's just one server, grep alone might make the cut for you, but I think most of you, if not all of you, have several virtual machines or several servers, and you're here because grep is not making the cut for you, and maybe other solutions after, you know, just grepping the logs are not making the cut for you. And I think the next step after that, when you realize, oh, I cannot just grep logs and use simple shell scripts to get my results. When you reach that point, I think the first solution that you think it's not generally MapReduce. You think about a relational database, right? You think, I'll just send my logs to MySQL, and I'll use SQL to query the logs. That also works up to a certain point. But then you realize that you're fighting, when you're doing selects, you're fighting with the updates. You're basically having tons of writes getting into the way of your selects. So you just want to query your logs, but your MySQL cluster is busy handling all the writes because you're sending, you're basically telling syslog, just dump all this data through MySQL. And as I said before, it works well for a while. And then you start getting into these problems. You can shard MySQL. You can put more indexes. But then in order to put the right indexes, you need to understand which queries you're going to get. And you need to prioritize the queries you're going to get. And it brings me to the next point. BigQuery has a hard to beat CapEx in that sense, because BigQuery is a software as a service. It's not something that you need to install, to deploy yourself. You just really need to worry about getting the data into BigQuery and then start querying away. The difference here is, and then you can say, well, but how does BigQuery handle my writes when I'm doing selects, when I'm basically just querying the data? There's a separate system to handle the ingestion, and it won't interfere with your selects. And last but not least, it's the log analysis to enhance the product. So if you see, if you think of log analysis to enhance the product, and that's something that 5 years ago I didn't really realize, that I can empower product managers and project managers with the logs, and they can use that to drive decisions about their products. It's not just for system administration. It's not just for, oh, that machine A has a problem. It's seeing the logs that you have from all the way the application logs, web server logs, and system logs as an asset for the company. So yeah, I've been mentioning MapReduce a lot, but let me show you how it works in basic details here. So you have a master which is running for most of the time, and it will construct a plan, and it will begin to spinning up workers to do the map phase. So you write a map function, which could be something like counting words in a document. So let's say you have a bunch of documents, and the map function could be just splitting that documents into logical words. So that's what the mappers would be doing. So the master starts spinning up mappers. It will read from the shared storage. And the map phase is basically that, right? I'm just splitting a bunch of documents into different words. It could be logs, right? A bunch of logs and just splitting into the words or into some more logical component for the logs, basically columns. So then the mappers will be reading from and writing to shared storage. And there's a shuffle phase. So some companies are working on in-memory shuffle, but the way basic shuffle works to order how to split up the work from mappers to reducers, it also touches the disk in a traditional way. Their company is working to speed up the shuffle there, but the reducers finally, after the mapper phase, the map phase finishes, the reducers will get by key, so basically by word, and then start compiling that list of the words to give you the result, to say word Lisa has been there for 5,000 occurrences. With the reducers, we will also read and write from shared storage. So you can see there's a lot of I/O going on. Mappers go read from shared storage. Reducers, we also go read from and write to shared storage. Shuffle could be in memory if it's optimized, but not always. The master is always running, but the mappers and the reducers, they're specific to your query. They're not always running. So you need to wait until they spin up. It's super flexible, right? The map function, you can think of a lot of things. Calculate page rank. Everything that you can split like in a massive scale, you can do with MapReduce. Super flexible, but there's this spin up time that sometimes you don't need if you do a few things, a few smarter things along the way with that data. And that brings us to Dremel. So BigQuery, which again is the external product which is available, it behind the scenes uses the same architecture as Dremel, as I mentioned at the beginning, and it works as a tree. So the tree is always running. It's very different from just the master, which is running in the MapReduce job. So the tree is always there. Let's go bottom up. So you can see there's a shared storage and lots of leaf nodes. Another trick, one trick I show you is the SQLite query. So it's very easy for the users to not see an impact. They don't need to learn a new language like Sawzall. So one trick is a SQLite language. Another trick, columnar storage. The best way I can explain that is imagine a syslog entry, the whole record. When you do a tail into a vars log syslog file, you see one entry per line. Here in the shared storage, it will be basically one file or multiple files per column. So there is no tail to a var log syslog. Basically, it splits per column. And the columns would be things like message, host, facility, priority in terms of syslog. So you're going to have many files with just priority-related information. You're going to have way more files with message, sorry, the same amount of files with message-related information. So it's split by column. That's one of the tricks to speed up the Dremel query. And if you remember in the beginning when I show you select task name and data center, Dremel would only touch the task name related files and the data center related files. It doesn't need to touch the whole thing, unlike MapReduce. So as I mentioned in the beginning, it's a long-lived shared serving tree. So it's always running. The client talks to the mixer zero all the way to the top. The mixer zero won't spin up mixer one. It won't spin up leaf nodes. They're running, waiting for your query. And they can execute many queries at the same time. One level up to the leaf nodes, another interesting thing, and I told you on the MapReduce case, the mappers write and read a lot to disk, to share a disk. The reducers write and read a lot to share a disk. Here, the leaf nodes will read from disk, and the data is sharded per column. The leaf nodes are busy crunching the data from shared storage and aggregating that data and sending remote procedure calls back up to the mixer one, which does a bunch of more aggregations. And the mixer one also sends remote procedure call up again to the mixer zero, which has the final result, computes the final results, and sends back to the client. So after the leaf nodes, you can see no one touches the disk. So there's not a lot of I/O going on after that. It's just really passing messages from the leaf to mixer one and mixer one to mixer zero. That also speeds things up from the very beginning. So if you have a huge data set, but you're just querying task name and data center information as it did in the beginning, it will be fast no matter how bigger is the total data set. Another improvement there I should mention is if the data looks very similar per column basis, basically the cardinality of the data is not too high, or too high, I should say, you're going to get a very good compression ratio out of that data, which is also something that decreases the cost of storage. Now let me show you a few queries. So here you can see the BigQuery front end. So it's a web UI. You'll be like, bummer, I don't like web UIs. There's a command line tool as well. And as I mentioned at the beginning, an API. So if you don't like the web user interface, you don't need to use it. I'll just demo it there because it's easier. I can copy and paste queries from docs to the web UI. But yeah, web UI, command line tool. There's a shell with the command line tool that's using readline and an API, so you can basically bring your own code if you want to integrate with BigQuery. Let me start by giving you an idea of the size of the data set we're talking about here. I hope you can see I'm just selecting count as rows and from weblogs.lisa10m. So it's about 10 million rows. So yeah, nothing impressive. It takes 3 seconds to respond. It's not processing a lot of data. It's showing that I have 10 million rows in that data set. It's not touching a lot of data. I'm not doing anything impressive yet. And now, just so you can see, to compare, the 163M actually has around 163 million rows. Again, fast. In that case, if you're scanning the data to see even the data set, the amount of data set, if you're just using WC-L in like a huge log file, that would take some time in your machine. So that's where you start seeing that it could help. In the weblogs data set, I just have sample logs from one machine. In the syslogs data set, I have sample logs from more than one machine. But if you're up to customize your log files and upload them, you can really have any kind of information inside the same table. You don't need to shard your tables per machine. That's what I mean. I recommend you sharding per day. It seems not natural, but I can comment in a few minutes why you could do that to help. Now let me do something more interesting and show you how the data looks like. Let's see if that will work. All right, so 2 seconds for the 10 million rows to show just random entries, just two entries. I'm limiting at two. Now with the 163 million data sets, again, a random data set, two rows. And now, something more useful. So I want to see in the 10 million rows, I want to break down per request, and I want to count each request as hits and group by request. So yeah, it also takes 3 seconds to basically tell me that, you know, basically a get slash is getting X number of hits. So it's a breakdown per request. I could also order by hits in descending order. Again, 3 seconds to order by hits in descending order. So basically, slash admin has more hits than slash. Again, 3 seconds in that data set. Let's try something bigger. So this one is basically doing the same thing with just a much bigger data set. All right, so you see it touched 3 gigabytes of data, but still took only 20 seconds. So out of 163 million rows, so to give you a sense, it's like there's not a lot many websites in the top 1,000 websites with that see 163 million page views per day. So then if it was just a daily table, it would take 20 seconds to do a breakdown of the requests by hits and show you in the descending order. And that's just by basically doing the data crunching on your logs. We can also do by status. So again, less than 5 seconds to basically do a breakdown by status code. So most of the requests were returning 200 there. Because you have basically most of the queries that I'm doing, they take less than 5 seconds. If I increase the data size, it doesn't exponentially grow as the data size grows, and that unlocks you to basically write dashboards and then give the power to people in your organization, project managers, or even other sysadmins on your group to just look at the dashboard. So once you write it, and you can plot graphs and do similar stuff like that to basically have the bulk of your data set well understood and do log analysis better than just, you know, grep logs and use MySQL. So I saw there's like a high number of 404s there. Let me see if I can drill down to those and check out how they look like. So in 2 seconds, I can see that, you know, slash food doesn't exist. So the top request there, I'm just getting top request and one as request. So that's the top request. Foo is the top request, but only where status equals 404. And that's from Weblog's Lisa 10M, which I showed you in the beginning. It's a data set of 10 million rows. It took only 2 seconds to figure out where most of my 404s are going to. And again, the Weblogs data set has just logs from one machine. If you had logs from multiple machines, you could drill down to the exact machines that are returning more 404s, so maybe, or maybe a 500. So you could check if there's a problem with that machine. And again, you don't need to keep querying it. I'm just showing you as a demo. You don't need to keep querying it. After you establish the queries, you can just put into the dashboard and have a field in the dashboard where people can file with more queries. And so nothing here is cached or indexed. I should mention that. So again, it took 13 seconds to go through more than 4 gigabytes of data and on the bigger data set to tell me the source of most of the 404s that I'm seeing in the weblogs here. You can do joins. The left side needs to be a bit smaller. And by left side, so if you're doing joins, you can basically join information from two tables. So I could be joining, it just said I'm using sample data, so I don't have a relationship between the syslog data with the weblog data. But if you do have some relationships, if you establish a relationship in your logs with the weblogs and the syslogs data, you could join them into one query. The left side needs to be a bit smaller. So here I'm basically doing top per IP. Top two IPs where I'm seeing 500s. Again, the 10 million rows data set. Less than 5 seconds again, 2.5 seconds. A few megabytes of data. Let's try something more tricky now. So on this one, I'm selecting IP, I'm selecting the request, I'm counting that as hits from the 10 million data set, but only where the IP starts by 10 dot. And I'm grouping by request and IP and ordering by hits in descending order. So that takes less than 5 seconds again. Let me show you now the syslogs data set, which is bigger. So here, again, counting the number of rows into syslog data set. So it took 2 seconds to tell you that we have 324 million log entries. I have log entries from 3 sample machines here. Let me show you the content of the actual data set. So here, the syslog format has time, priority, facility, program, process ID, host, and message. You can see there time, priority, facility, and program, like in this area here. I'm showing you basically 2 sample entries out of like the 324 million rows that I have. So let me see how much, I see there's a Mayo facility there, so let me see how much of the entries that correspond to the program anti-span I'm seeing in terms of hand and span and total. You see, the only thing really limiting this query is basically the where clause that I get program equals anti-span. So there you have it. So total is basically the total number of entries that have program equals anti-span, and hams, the number of messages where I have ham. So it could be an anti-span software basically dumping into the log what's ham, what's span, processing the message. Less than 20 seconds to touch more than 11 gigabytes of data. And again, the data set has 324 million rows, right? So it's vast amount of data. I don't need to basically wait and go through that whole data, wait on MapReduce, or I haven't worked on an index here, and I haven't cached it. And that basically enables people to come up with all sorts of queries as they go. They don't need to basically do any kind of capacity planning in advance to basically just execute the queries. Let me do two more. This one here, I'm basically counting the total log entries, which I show in the beginning, the number of rows, 324. And I'm looking for message where from equals root at Google and program the queue manager from postfix, basically to check how many messages came from that email address versus the total log entries. So yeah, again, less than 20 seconds, total log entries. You can see 324 million. But the best, the number of entries where that message is present is much smaller, but it's still quite significant. So for the last one, I will show you something with like using the idea that we have information about the one more than one machine. So here I'm counting the entries where program equals Lisa, and I'm also exposing the PID and the host. And by the host, the machine that generated that log entry. So yeah, out of the 324 million rows, it only took 23 seconds to basically aggregate all the data that was necessary to tell me that for the program Lisa, I have it running. I have this daemon running in host foo 1, foo 2, and foo 3. The PID is the same, and it shows you the number of entries. So again, nothing pre-computed here, no cache, and it only took 23 seconds to respond. So let me get back to the presentation. All right. I have a few backup slides in case the Wi-Fi was not cooperating. So now you can be like, okay, so how does that work? How could I put it together, the same kind of demo that I showed you? So I would start by installing the command line tools. There is a Google Cloud Storage one called JS Audio. It's optional. The BigQuery command line tool is highly recommended because the BigQuery command line tool is the one you're going to use to actually load the data that you have locally to Google BigQuery. The cloud storage tool is optional because you can move data from your local disk all the way to BigQuery directly. I tend to upload it first to cloud storage because it just gives me a backup of that data. And it also, after I first upload to cloud storage, it will be much faster to upload from cloud storage to materialize it into to BigQuery. And then finally, so if you're preloading from your local machine or you're preloading through cloud storage to BigQuery, you just run the bq load command with a few arguments, and then you can start querying. So that's really what it takes. You log to CSV, and then you upload your data. You bq load, which is a job, so you use bq load to basically tell BigQuery, here is my data, and here's the columns that I'm using, the columns that this data represents, the CSV file represents, and you can start querying. Just as a note there, BigQuery also supports JSON. You can say, well, why not support also syslog and Como Apache logs or something like that. We are investigating how to make that easier for you, because in the end of the day, you can customize your log files, and a lot of people do. But yeah, we are working on basically make that easier instead of passing through CSV or JSON. But for now, I would say log to CSV. And if you want to continue to log to the format you're currently using, it's fine. You can log to both. And then upload, and then BQ load, and then you can start querying. Or alternatively, you can get your historical data, basically your historical logs, convert them to CSV or JSON, and then upload. So yeah, I recommend in the beginning, the demo, basically to log rotate and then have daily tables. If you don't have a huge data set in terms of hundreds of millions of rows, it's fine to just keep everything in one table. But you're going to see as the table grows over time, certain kinds of queries, you're going to scan a lot of columns. So you're going to end up scanning more data than you want. You can restrict by date, too. You can all the queries start restricting by date. But that, at some point, won't be very effective to you. It really depends on the number of machines and the amount of data that you have. But log rotate and have daily tables is not a bad idea. Append data is supported, so you can append rows to an existing table. So you can say, oh, I've just added a bunch of new virtual machines that I want to start dumping my log into that table during that given day. You can append data. There's no updates. So you have selects on BigQuery, you can append data through the ingestion system. The ingestion system won't stop BigQuery, it won't block BigQuery. And for that, we don't have updates. So once you upload the data, you can either delete it or you can append to that existing data. You cannot update an existing record, which doesn't make much sense to do in terms of logs, right? Once you log, you don't go in, like the software won't go, the web server won't go there and change an existing log entry. So that should be very natural for system log analysis. You can copy tables around too. It's kind of a rename. It doesn't take long. And you can upload zip files, gzip files. You can upload compressed files, which will cut down the cost of storage and will make transfers faster. You can be asking yourself about pricing. So the URL about pricing is cloud.google.com/pricing/big-query. So it has the round numbers there. The important information for you right now is the first 100 gigabytes of data processed per month is at no cost. The only thing that really costs is the query processing and the storage in BigQuery. That's very important. If you have this huge data set, you're only going to pay for storage. But if you're not querying that data set, every query, you pay only for the data that you touch. You don't pay because you have a huge data set, then you're doing small queries. So the cost of the query does increase as the data set grows, unless you're basically querying through the whole data set. Cloud storage pricing is different. So if you're going to do that backup thing on cloud storage and do the bridge to BigQuery, the pricing for cloud storage is different, but it also has a free tier until June next year. So basically, you can start using both right now for free, up to 100 gigabytes per second BigQuery. And I forgot the exact quota for cloud storage, but I think it's on the meta of gigabytes as well. As I mentioned before, I have a little homework for you. So let me show you that. Don't worry about grabbing the link now. The slides will be available later. But so the homework essentially means I'm showing you the step-by-step of how to replicate that demo I showed you into a smaller scale. So you create a project into the Google API console. So if you don't have a Google project, you can create a project. And then you download and install the command line tools, Google Storage Earth-U and BigQuery. You authenticate in both, so you basically do bqinit and just Earth-U config. They're just to basically authorize using OAuth to authorize your that specific machine that you're using for tasks to authenticate as you, as your project to Google. And then finally, you and that's the most complicated process using Google Storage, Google Cloud Storage. So you create a dir, which is a bucket inside Cloud Storage. You copy the CSV sample, the three lines I have there, to Google Cloud Storage. BigQuery MQ basically lets you create a data set. So weblogs and syslogs are data sets. So you can create a data set with your name underscore weblogs. And then you tell BigQuery load to get that CSV that you just uploaded to Cloud Storage and convert that. Well, and it converts basically, it's split per column. So you can start querying. And then you run BQ shell after that, and then you can start selecting queries. You can start selecting your data right away. So what's next after that? You can read our query cookbook page. And you can also look over our ingestion best practices, where you're going to have some hints about in terms of limits and like how many jobs you can use. Because if you have thousands of servers, it's not highly recommended that you, from every single server, you start sending the data. I would say you can just send the data to Cloud Storage and not necessarily from thousands of servers start BQ loading data into BigQuery directly. Or you can have an aggregator service. If you're using syslog daemon and aggregating into a smaller set of machines, you can use that smaller set of machines as aggregator and ingest from there and do ingestion from there. That will help you not reach the BigQuery limits in terms of ingestion per project. And we also have a Google Dash BigQuery Stack Overflow tag. So it might be useful for you to take a look on the questions that are asked there and things that you might end up encountering as you start using it. All right. Go back to the presentation. Okay. Another thing I should mention, there's the Google Visualization API. So if you don't want to worry about using GNUplot or something like that, we also have an API that you can use to plot graphs out of those query results that I showed you. We have a visualization API for that. All right. We're going to jump now into Q&A. I left the homework slide there. It's and again, these slides will be available into the presentation material. But it's go.gl/jkhfc, JFNC in caps. I think you guys can see there. So if you have any questions, we have two mics there that you can use.
Hi. So I'm just wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on how Dremel scale. I could see that you show the tree with mixer 0 on top and then mixer 1, then leaves. So my question is, what are being processed by the leaves? What being processed by mixer, and how does your system scale?
Good question. So the leaf nodes, they're the only one touching the shared storage. So they do most of the work. They open the files, the column-based files. They do most of the data crunching at the leaf level. And after they do the aggregations, they send back a remote procedure calls response to the mixer one, which is going to do another round of aggregations. We have many mixer one tasks they're getting basically response from the leaf nodes. And the same thing with the mixer zero. I just shown one mixer zero, but we have multiple mixer zeros. It's just that the client, your client, is going to just talk to one mixer zero at once, but we have multiple mixer zeros to respond to queries in parallel. And the mixer zero, I can tell you that at the mixer zero level is when the limit clause happens. So if you have a limit 5 on your query, that's what the mixer zero will basically get rid of the rest of the data. And then we have different sets of aggregations happening at the mixer one. There's not a lot going on in the leaf node in terms of aggregations, but there's a lot of data crunching. It's day one. The leaf nodes are the ones that open the actual files for processing. Does that answer your question? Any more questions?
I noticed that you have some public data sets out there. I was wondering if you could comment on what some of the public data sets are and maybe some examples of how to work with those public data sets.
Sure. So for the public data sets you're mentioning, they're not related to specifically to system logs. So the public data sets, we have the GitHub timeline, Wikipedia post. So when people post Wikipedia, it makes that Wikipedia data set. And there's a BigQuery query cookbook that references the public data sets. So basically on the BigQuery page, you can see more information about those public data sets.
What's the most interesting thing somebody is doing with this, if you can comment on that, that you know of?
What I can tell you is the ads group heavily uses it. So the ads group at Google heavily uses BigQuery internally.
Do they use it for reporting or sort of real-time stuff?
For all sorts of stuff. That's all I can tell you.
Okay.
Any more questions? We have one more.
Yeah, I have a question. I noticed that, it's handy, of course, that it tells you how long it takes the query to complete, but I was wondering, is there any way to get like a progress bar or some sort of estimate of how long some of these queries would take? Because some of them take 2 or 3 seconds, some of them take 30 seconds. If it's 30 seconds, you might want to try and do something else during that 30 seconds instead of just waiting.
That's a good question. We just can't know in advance. As the query progresses, we basically don't have a way to report back through the API to tell you when we estimate the query to finish. And it also changes as the system is loaded, right? As I told you, it's a shared serving tree. It's a huge tree to basically handle many, many, many queries per second. But depending on your data set, depending on how busy the tree is, it's going to change. And we don't have a way to pump back through the API to tell you an estimate on when the query is going to complete. But as you can see, it's generally very fast.
Upper bound on how long queries ever take? Do they ever take multiple minutes for really large data sets, for example?
They could take multiple minutes if you have a larger data set and a very complex query. It's just that during the demo, we won't sit here around for 5 minutes. But if you're talking about billions of rows and you're basically scanning many columns, they can take multiple minutes. It's just that you can do a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
And with huge data sets and get responses in real time, basically submit a response.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
So if I'm uploading logs, and how does it know to parse them? Is it expecting certain popular log formats, or what if I have an app that has a very idiosyncratic log format? Would it try to do its best, or would I have to give it hints, or how would that work?
So yeah, you need to upload or convert your logs. To CSV or JSON. So you can have any format you can imagine in terms of system logs and web logs or application logs. If you convert that to CSV or JSON, during the BQ load time, you're going to provide a name for every column. So basically for every CSV entry or every CSV column per entry, you're going to provide a column name, and it and basically goes from there.
So we're basically expected to pre-parse them into a standard format with column names.
Yeah, you basically give the system a hint that, hey, here's my CSV, here's the column names. And then, yeah, the BQ load ingestion system, what it does, it's basically going to get that hint and split into column files, per column files. Okay. So that's part of that's where part of the speed comes from. Any other question? We have one more.
So I actually haven't used Splunk, but I'm familiar with it. I understand that you'd be able to do large queries of log analysis. And so maybe you could give me some insight into why use this as opposed to something like Splunk.
Sorry, why use this versus what?
Splunk.
So yeah, I haven't used that, so I can't really comment on BigQuery versus that solution. Sorry.
Let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.